Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
So we have this call, we have this opportunity, we have this word from the Lord, not by might or by power. It's by my Spirit. Trust me. Don't worry about all of those things that you can't figure out. You know, God has his ways. We know this theoretically, God can do anything, but he really can do anything.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study through the books of the Old Testament prophets. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Zechariah chapter 4. Now here's Pastor Brian.
They would have seemed impossible if I was strong, but I was actually weak at the time, which made it doubly impossible, it seemed. And I was thinking back about, you know, how many times I've been in those kinds of situations where it just didn't look possible. It didn't look like it could be done or would be done. And everything in me was saying, you know, don't go that way, or people around me were saying, I don't think that's the way. And yet deep inside, there's that still small voice that's saying, this is the way. Walk toward it. So God is faithful to encourage. He's faithful to encourage us. And that's what's happening with Zerubbabel. He is completely discouraged. That's why Zechariah and Haggai are sent to them by the Lord. It just seems like this project is impossible. It's never going to get done. We don't have the strength ourselves. We don't have the resources. We don't have the manpower. We don't have anything like that. It's never going to get done. And what is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel? Not by might, nor by power. It's not going to get done the way we think it's going to get done. That's quite often how it all works out. So one commentator, he said this, he's a Hebrew scholar, a Jewish man who came to faith in Christ many, many years ago. And then became quite an advocate for the gospel and taught these prophetic books with his Jewish people in mind. His name was David Baron. But he said this about the passage here. He said, the word might, which also means an army or host, probably stands for the strength of many, while power stands for that of one man. The two might be taken to express human strength and power of every description, physical, mental, and moral. Individual or the combined strength of the multitude. And what is he saying? It's not by that. That is not how it's going to happen. We so often put so much emphasis on our own ability, our own strength, our own wisdom, our own understanding. And certainly God uses us and he gives us a mind and all of those things are part of what God does. But at the end of the day, when you strip everything back, it's not by might or by power. Those things are not the things that avail in the big picture. It's not by that, but it's by my Spirit, says the Lord of hosts. And then, who are you, O great mountain? So like I said, the task just seemed insurmountable. It's like a mountain before Zerubbabel. And what is the word here? Before Zerubbabel, you shall become a plain. God's saying, I'm just going to level that. And it would be just a few short years before all of this would be fulfilled. And the climactic moment is, and he shall bring forth the capstone. The capstone would be the final piece of the temple with shouts of grace, grace to it. So this is the word to Zerubbabel. This is what the Lord is telling him. That contrary to what you feel or think or what it looks like, this temple is going to be rebuilt and you're going to shout for joy when the capstone is placed on it. And again, maybe you've had this. Like I said, I know I have. Maybe the Lord's spoken this word to you at times in your life. Maybe the Lord's spoken this word to you a long time ago about something that's still present. It's still an issue. And you're still trying to figure out, how is this going to get accomplished? How is this ever going to get done? I can't see it ever happening. Because you're thinking about how you might do it. Or you're looking around and trying to figure out how it might get done through other resources or other people or whatever the case. And the Lord wants you to hear this word, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. And so he shall bring forth the capstone with shouts of grace, grace to it. I love that, shouts of grace. And at the end, I mean, that is what we're banking on, right? We're banking on the grace of God. Again, going back to the topic of weakness, remember when Paul, he is struggling with this, what he calls a thorn in the flesh. He talks about it in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. A thorn of the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet him. He doesn't tell us what it is, but it seems like it's some kind of chronic physical affliction. And so he's talking about that, and he says, and I sought the Lord 3 times that he would take this from me. And the reply of Jesus was, basically, I'm not going to take this from you. What Jesus said to him is that my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is perfected in your weakness. So it's that grace. My grace is sufficient for you. I'm going to give you grace. And so when everything's said and done, you're going to look back and say, wow, look what God did. This is what he did by his grace. And so likewise, when they finally complete this temple, they're going to look back and be able to say, wow, look what God did by his grace. And, you know, when those things happen, whether they happen in biblical history and they're written down so we can learn from them, or they happen in our lives, or we see them happen in the lives of other people, you know, that is meant to encourage us in our faith. It's meant to encourage us to keep going forward. And, we live in a time, even in much of the church today, where the thought of a radical dependency on the Lord is not in the thinking process of so many people who lead churches and ministries. They've got it all mapped out. They've got the corporate vision for everything. They've got all the I's dotted and the T's crossed and all the ducks in a row, and this is how we're going to do this, and this is what we're going to do with that. And, you know, it's a lot of human energy and ingenuity. And on the surface, it looks like, wow, this looks amazing. Look what's happening. But, you know, there's always a point where you start to see cracks in that. And then oftentimes the thing just starts to crumble and you think, wow, what was going on there? And in the last couple of years, I mean, we've seen, if you're looking at stuff like this, not everybody is, but you know, ministries that were massive, ministries that were world renowned, just making a name for themselves, leaving their mark wherever they went, and just suddenly they started to crack. And some of them have completely crumbled. And there's just nothing left. It's just dust. There was a church movement back, you know, 10 years ago that was the talk of the Christian world, evangelical world, however you want to define it. I mean, everybody was talking about this ministry. It was fabulous. It was unbelievable. It was doing extraordinary things, campuses everywhere, thousands of people coming to faith, just like no stopping them. Sky's the limit. We're going to Mars with this thing. We're going to take it all the way. And within a year period, it completely vanished from off the scene. It no longer exists. And all that's left of it are a bunch of broken people who were trusting, unfortunately, in the flesh. They were trusting in human might and human power. They weren't really trusting in the Spirit of the Lord. And there's nothing left of it. So we have this call. We have this opportunity. We have this word from the Lord, not by might or by power. It's by my Spirit. Trust me. Don't worry about all of those things that you can't figure out. You know, God has his ways. We know this theoretically, God can do anything, but he really can do anything. It's not good enough to just know, like, oh yeah, sure, God can do anything. Just like, no, he really can do anything. And sometimes he will do things that just completely astound you. And when this project was finished, that's the way everybody felt. They looked back and all they could say was grace, grace to it. Man, God has done this. Against all the odds, against all the opposition. So, and here's this really specific word for Zerubbabel. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple. His hands shall also finish it. Now, I think what you see with both Haggai's prophecy and Zechariah's, you see people who are really discouraged. And Zerubbabel is discouraged. Well, he knows that he was there at the beginning, but he can't imagine the project ever being finished. And evidently, he can't imagine him ever having a significant role in finishing the project. But the word of the Lord to him is, Zerubbabel's hands have laid the foundation. His hands will finish it. Man, I bet you that was like the biggest booster shot of all time for Zerubbabel. He's going to finish the work. Then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you. Now, if you remember, there are two other times already in Zechariah where we've seen this. Then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you. And maybe you remember we were looking at one where it was actually Yahweh speaking about Yahweh. And then Yahweh speaking to the people saying, when this happens, then you will know that Yahweh sent me. And so we saw how that obviously is speaking of Christ. And so the question here is this Zechariah saying, when this is finished, you're going to know that the Lord has sent me to you? Or is this, again, a projection further out, and this is, again, the Messiah? Now, if we think of Zerubbabel, and I think we rightfully should think of him this way, he is a type of Christ. And maybe remember last week that we talked about, and we'll get to it more when we get to chapter 6, that one of the things that Jesus is going to do when he returns is he is going to build the temple. He's going to build the millennial temple. He's not only going to build the temple, he's going to sit upon the throne of David, and he's going to be a priest upon his throne. So this is where all of these things from the Old Testament sort of, they all finally come together. Throughout all of Old Testament history, the priesthood and the monarchy are completely separated. The priests are the Levitical tribe. The monarchy comes from the tribe of Judah, and they're not to cross. They're not to, no priest is to sit on the throne, and no king is to take up the priesthood. Because there was only one person that would be reserved for, and that's the Lord, the one they call the branch. We looked at that last time. Now, Zerubbabel, again, he is a type of Christ. So when it's talking about him laying the foundation of the temple and him also finishing it, it, of course, it's looking 4 years down the road when it is finished, but this is more than just that temple. It's everything that temple symbolizes all out into the future. Remember in Haggai's prophecy how the glory of this temple they're building, which remember the people who had seen Solomon's temple, they were super discouraged. The ones who were born in Babylon and didn't know anything about it, they were so excited a temple was being built. The ones who had seen Solomon's temple or actually heard about it, maybe you know from their parents, they were looking at this new structure and they were weeping. They were discouraged because it just seemed like nothing. And as that was the situation, remember Haggai said the glory of this latter house will be greater than the glory of the former. And we know that was fulfilled in one sense when Jesus came and taught in that latter house. He taught in that temple. But it also is projecting out to the end. So, but here's an important word. For who has despised the day of small things? So there were those that, again, they just thought that there was nothing to get excited about. What is this in comparison to what we knew in the past? And they were despising the day of small things. They were just looking at the whole situation and thinking, there's nothing here. Nothing's going to happen here. Oh, man, the old days, they were so amazing. It was unbelievable, the glory of Solomon's temple. It was unbelievable, the great works that God did. And look at this. This is nothing. This is like a joke. That's how some of them felt. They were despising the day of small things. For who has despised the day of small things? For these seven rejoice to see. Now the seven, again, goes back to where we were before. The seven, remember those seven eyes? They represented the seven spirits of the Lord, the fullness of the Lord, the omniscience of the Lord. And so these seven are a reference to the Spirit of the Lord. For these seven rejoice to see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. They are the eyes of the Lord which scan to and fro throughout the whole earth. So God is saying, he's challenging them. Who's despising the day of small things? Not the Lord. The Lord is rejoicing to see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. The Lord, the fact that Zerubbabel is taking up the work. Nothing's happened yet. But the fact that he's taking up the work, the Lord is rejoicing in that. Because, of course, he knows where it's going to head. He knows that it's going to be completed. And, you know, again, this is something that we all kind of have to struggle through at times in our individual lives as Christians. You know, there are times when it just seems like everything is small and insignificant and doesn't seem like God's doing much of anything. And we can get really discouraged in those times. And when you're in ministry and you're leading a church, you're leading a ministry, this is the struggle of every single pastor. It's not a pastor on earth that doesn't struggle with the day of small things. Not because all pastors want to be great and they're on an ego trip and they want to have something big. Some do. But, you know, people just want to see God do something. And they want to feel like I'm actually, you know, what I'm doing counts. But the struggle so often is it's like, man, this just seems, just doesn't seem like anything's happening. And we know people all around the world who have labored for decades and they've got, you know, a relatively small group of people. And they are so prone to discouragement. They are so often feeling like failures. And I've had many conversations with people like that. And I've even thought myself like, well, you know, maybe you need to just, it's time to throw in the towel. It's time to move on. It's time to do something else. And then you sit, you talk, and you pray, and you look at the scriptures, and then the end is like, nope, I think the Lord wants you to stay here. Keep at it. Because, hey, if the Lord is rejoicing, then that's really all that matters. And for anyone who's being faithful to what God has called them to, regardless of what it looks like outside to people, if the Lord is rejoicing in it, then that's all I need to know. And that's what the word was here. Then I answered and said to him. So here now comes the question about where we started. What are these two olive trees at the right of the lampstand and at its left? So Zechariah understands evidently what the lampstand is, but the mystery is what are the olive trees? And he answered me, verse 13, and said, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my Lord. So he said, these are the two anointed ones who stand before the Lord of the whole earth.
For the month of March, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Is Easter Unbelievable? Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin. We live in a world devoid of hope, but there are plenty of counterfeits masquerading as true hope, such as pleasure, comfort, or entertainment. But as the world chases the elusiveness of hope apart from the person of Jesus, Rebecca McLaughlin will help you wrestle with the reliability of the resurrection of Jesus before explaining why you should accept his offer of hope. Perhaps hope is something that you've been longing for. Have you ever sought after hope through endless pursuits that always seem to end in disappointment? Are you ready to stop pursuing after things that do not ultimately satisfy and finally discover what true hope really is? Well, in her book, Is Easter Unbelievable? Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin, she'll help you understand that hope is not just wishful thinking. She will help take a fresh look at the resurrection of Jesus to help you discover what true hope really is for yourself and discover that the resurrection is really not unbelievable at all. Happy endings are not just a scam. The resurrection of Jesus can bring you true hope. So if you want to take a fresh look at the resurrection of Jesus and consider for yourself if it's reliable or not, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. Or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order Is Easter Unbelievable?
Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Zechariah. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.